When blacks began to move into some North St. Louis County municipalities, whites began moving away in a race-based exodus that's come to be called white flight. Spanish Lake was one of those communities. It, like many of the others, experienced a period of population change and economic decline. A new documentary titled Spanish Lake opens at the Tivoli in University City on Friday, telling the story. It was directed by a young man who grew up in Spanish Lake and has taken on the tough subject of white flight. It's been called an unflinching film. Philip Andrew Morton is the homegrown director of Spanish Lake, and he joins me in studio. Philip, so nice to have you with us.
Great. It's a pleasure to be here.
I have to think that this must have been something of a bittersweet experience for you, putting all this together.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Just returning to Spanish Lake after all those years to see my old house abandoned and my school abandoned, my church abandoned, was a very heartbreaking experience. It wasn't what I was expecting. And so to make peace with that experience, I decided to make this documentary as a support system for people that have had the same experience of seeing their hometown decline and or abandoned.
And, of course, it's not a unique story. And certainly in this area and all over the country, this sort of thing's been going on for a generation.
Oh, many, 100 years.
Yeah.
It's a deeply ingrained part of American culture, and I knew that this story of Spanish Lake was universal. This is just a microcosm of a community that has changed mostly due to race, and that any community across the U.S. could easily identify with it.
How difficult was it for you to put it together, going back there now and talking to people who are there now who know the story all too well?
I think the two biggest difficulties for me were, one was financially, was to get the money to make the film, because you have to hire a cast and crew, and it's a very expensive process, so that took time to get the financial. But the second most problematic was to interview enough people to get a variety of different viewpoints so that the film didn't have a bias, that I could get as many perspectives as possible so that everybody could feel that they had a voice in the film.
Was there any resentment on the part of anybody to having you there and doing this filming?
Not from any current Spanish Lake residents, and not from anybody I interviewed. Not resentment towards myself, maybe in terms of what had happened, yes, but not for me.
With regard to the funding, I have to get back to that. You're using one of the new methods, or have used one of the new methods that many entrepreneurs are using to fund their projects. Tell us about that.
In 2011, I spent the first filming money. That was my own money. I got it off the ground. I cut a trailer, and then we put it up on Kickstarter. Kickstarter is a website that many young artists are using to get public funding for their projects. So it's kind of like a short-term fundraising process, and a lot of people are very successful with it. So we got some of our money through Kickstarter.
What did it cost? How much did you raise?
We aimed for 20. I think after they took out their cut and everything, we got about 15,000 out of it, which is still not much for a film.
Well, at least it's a start.
It was, and we were very appreciative for every cent that everybody donated.
What was Spanish Lake like when you were growing up there?
Spanish Lake was primarily a middle to lower middle class white community, heavily Catholic. It's a very rural area. It's right on the edge of the forest and the woods and the Mississippi and Missouri rivers. Pretty quiet, pretty quaint, lots of kids, and fairly safe. People kind of kept to themselves. You're just typical, what they would used to call all-American suburb.
Mostly white.
Almost exclusively white, yes.
All right. Well, let's take a listen to a clip from your film, Spanish Lake, as to what was going on and what caused people to think about getting out of town, if you will.
You had people that were starting to be afraid of who was at school and who wasn't and what happened afterwards.
And being afraid of really a lot of the racial mixing, you know, so now these handsome black guys are going to start coming to the school and my daughters are going to start looking at them and it's like, oh no.
People talked all the time about how dangerous the animals in Cordova apartments were. But that's almost all the effect I ever saw it had, was a lot of fear and a lot of talk and not a lot of action.
Was this the kind of thing you were hearing as you were growing up?
Yes, definitely. And it was from neighbors, it was from friends' moms and dads, and it usually had to do with the school system, you know, that there's too many black people at the school and they're not the best kind.
Well, the racial element is the key element to all of this. Regardless of what anybody might say, that has to be the key to this whole white flight process.
Yeah, but it's not that simple. I think a lot of it has to do with class. I actually think it has more to do with class than race, because the race and the class are so intertwined in St. Louis. But people are fearful of their property values, and that's what's driving it. So they have this association that if too many black people live on your block, that's going to cause your property value to tank. And also the schools. If the schools get too heavily populated with black people, then they think it's either more dangerous or the quality of their education will go down.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned this whole process of selling real estate and being concerned about property values. Another clip from your film, Spanish Lake, indicates what the tactics of realtors were during this particular period.
The real estate companies would buy a home on some of the blocks in North St. Louis. They would move a black family in with no rent. And then they would go to the white families that live right next to them and say, you know, a black family just moved in. Your home is going to be decreasing in value. We'll give you $25,000 now, and your home may only be worth $15,000 the next month.
So the real estate profession was involved in this and exploiting the fears and the kinds of things that you talk about in the film.
Yeah, and it hasn't ended. It's still a process that's continuing today, and it's funded and supported by not only local government but federal government.
How so?
Real estate agents have a clause in their contracts about steering. They're not allowed to talk about it. No real estate agent would go on camera to discuss this with me, even today. And the few that did want to, they went to their bosses, whether it was Coldwell Banker, Gundaker. They were told they couldn't do interviews for my film.
Well, that made it difficult for you, needless to say. You know, I want to give our audience an opportunity to get into this discussion. Perhaps you who are listening have had some experience with this whole white flight process on one side or the other. We'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Or you can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you would prefer to send us an email, did I give that address? talk@stlpublicradio.org. Send us a tweet at STL on air. This has happened in a number of other communities, particularly in North County. Why North County, do you think?
Okay. I've spoken with many political people in St. Louis, some that are older that were around during the periods where a lot of these decisions were made in terms of where the black population was being shifted. Some of this had to do with voting. North County, that area is the congressional district is Missouri Congressional District 1. It's represented by Missouri's first black congressman, who back then was William Clay. His son is
senior.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was then. And black politicians were starting to gain power, and that was starting to make a lot of the white politicians in Missouri fearful. So kind of supposedly their goal was to shift the black population to this one quadrant so their voting power would be limited.
No. Your motive in making this film, what do you hope comes of it? I mean, the die has already been cast. Do you expect to see change or hope for change of some sort?
Yeah. I mean, my first motivation in making the film was after I'd gone through the process of seeing my home abandoned and seeing my hometown change in a drastic way, there wasn't a film, there wasn't a book that I could go to really find solace in this. It was a really heartbreaking experience, and I needed to understand why it kept happening in St. Louis. So, you know, politically I needed to understand and give a reference, but just emotionally and psychologically, I wanted to have a piece that people could go to if they had gone through the same experience and be able to make closure and find support in that.
All right. We have some calls. Let's go to that. We're talking with Philip Andrew Morton. He is the director of the film Spanish Lake. It's going to be opening and run for a week at the Tivoli Theater in University City. That opening is scheduled for Friday night. Let's start with Simon calling from Hazelwood. Simon, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hey, Don. Good show. Hey, a couple of points to make. I'm actually from England. I'm of Indian descent. My part-time, now full-time profession is buying real estate in North City. I go from Lucas and Hunt down into Grand Avenue. I've got a lot of properties. I buy those beautiful brick homes. I, of Indian descent, I deal very well with the black community. I like the black community. All my friends are generally black. A couple of points I wanted to make that disturb me. I don't feel there's a lot of action by the aldermen in the areas. They are investing money unwisely in the neighborhood, building new developments rather than fix up the older homes that I can pick up for $10,000 to $15,000, and they're building these newer homes for $160,000. The other point is the lack of amenities from Lucas and Hunt down Natural Bridge down onto Grand Avenue. Did you know there's not one even sit-down restaurant other than fast food? I mean, there are no amenities at all. And I understand why the black community wants to leave and go to areas where there are decent amenities. And one other point I need to make, too. Most of my tenants are hardworking tenants. I'm a good landlord. But they work out in West County. So they have to drive out to West County, and they're generally in home care and other things. Then they come back into the inner city. And I think it's pretty ironic if they work in home care that are predominantly white, that wouldn't have them as neighbors, but they don't mind having them waiting on them now as they're elderly. And I think that's really ironic.
Thanks for the call. Want to react to that, Philip?
He touched upon several things. I just drove up North Grand to come to this interview, and I still am just in awe of all the brick building and architecture around this area that is neglect, and people don't appreciate that. I mean, living in Los Angeles, I don't have that. But what he did say about in terms of resources not being allocated, that has a lot to do with St. Louis County and how they allocate their tax money. Some areas of St. Louis County are much well kept than others, and that's a decision that's made by those at the top.
We did a program yesterday talking about the difference in zip codes and what a difference it makes in those that are more affluent and primarily in the poor ones. And the life expectancy in the poor neighborhoods is 18 years less than in the more affluent neighborhoods. I have an email here from Jeff in St. Louis I'll read too. He said, I think it's worth noting that white flight, though largely white, was essentially middle-class flight. The white society put up barriers such as redlining and sundown towns. Middle-class African-Americans found every way possible to get out of distressed communities as well. Many urban African-Americans felt and still feel abandoned by those who seemed, in their quest for respectability, all too eager to disassociate from their less fortunate fellows. So there is both white and black flight, apparently.
Yeah, it still ties it together with class. I think that's the real issue here.
That's a very interesting observation you have. By the way, I'd like to point out I have in front of me a graphic that our staff has put together here about white flight in Spanish Lake, showing that in 1970 the population was 100% white. And over the years, it has dropped considerably. And the year 2010, 20% of the population was white. So that's how much it's changed in just those years. And by the way, this graphic and other information is available on our website at stlpublicradio.org. All righty, let's go back to the phones, and we'll bring in, Pianchi. I hope I've pronounced the name correctly, calling from St. Louis. Pianchi, is that you?
Yeah, you've done a very good job with the name.
Great.
You know, I'm kind of with the one lady. I get kind of disturbed. We always want to jump on whites because they move or the things that they do. It's not the issue of people moving where they want to. It's when they are not allowed to move where they want to. To say that whites move because blacks moved into Spanish Lake, well, is that the reason they gave, or did they just wanted to move? Whites have a right to live around majority white communities, just as blacks have a right to live around majority black communities and everybody in between. I hear that same argument as it applies to schools, that all black schools will fail. And I know a lot of all black schools that do very well. I know a lot of all black communities that does very well. And the same goes on with whites. So I understand the meaning of you making this document, but to say that, whites have a right to move where they want to. If they don't feel comfortable, then they're not breaking the law. When they say that blacks can't move in the Spanish Lake, when the fire department say that we're not hiring blacks, then that is a violation of people's civil rights and also of the law.
Thanks so much for the call. Interesting points. Your thoughts?
He's absolutely right. People do have a total freedom to live where they want to live. But I do think people in Spanish, like the white population, was manipulated in a big way by real estate agents. And I think a good 50% of them that moved out of fear. They did not move out of choice.
Yeah, that is a point that I'm glad you made. I was going to make it myself with regard to his comments. Let's bring in Michelle calling from Florissant, also obviously in North County. Go ahead, Michelle.
Yes, thank you. I live close to Spanish Lake in Florissant, and it seems to be, I've been there about 18 years. Seems like about 15 years ago, or less, the white people may have had a meeting, and they all kind of moved at the same time, and the neighborhood became all black. And what happens is your property value will go down, as mine had. And then on top of that, but everybody have been keeping up their property, which is good, except some of the people who were renting out houses, HUD houses, to Section 8, they were not keeping up their houses. If you belong to a neighborhood community, what we will do is put pressure on those people to keep up their property, because that would create our properties to go down. So I don't think it's just because there's all blacks in one neighborhood and the property value would go down. If you don't keep it up, then that becomes a problem too. So a lot of the times you have to make sure there's not a lot of HUD houses in your neighborhood, because that's going to create a problem. But I do understand that it's more feasible to live in a mixed or white neighborhood, because you're buying your house for an investment. And if your house is not going up in value, then that becomes a problem.
Michelle, Michelle, thank you for the call. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah. She has a point. I do think, like she said, the realtors came in and scared a lot of the white people out. I think that property value, actually, from what I've investigated, it doesn't necessarily go down after black people had moved in. What really had happened was the economic crash of, I think, 2008, 2007, with the mortgages that failed. That caused property values to really skydive. But now that they're coming back up, the property values are actually kind of what they were at back when those houses were originally sold. The problem is they haven't gone up. You don't have any kind of increase in your property value.
What about the overall population of Spanish Lake? How is that different? We've given the percentages of white versus black. How has that changed over the years?
Well, in 1969, 1970, a whole bunch of apartments started going up across North County. In Spanish Lake, I think 2,000 apartments were put up in a year, 2,000 apartment units. And when that changes the composition of the population of the area, so you have a primarily lower income population, when that gets changed over to Section 8 housing, I think it's about 12% of Spanish Lake is now living in poverty. So you're dealing more with poverty. This is a class issue. This is not a race issue.
Right. Let's bring in Fred. The previous caller mentioned Section 8 housing. I think Fred wants to comment on that as well. Go ahead, Fred.
Yes, sir. Your caller just touched base. I lived up there and graduated from Hazelwood East, and I can share with you that the school system and the everything changed overnight when two or three large complexes went government housing. The change wasn't realtors telling people to sell their houses and move out. One day there was very little, I don't want to say that, you know, diversity, but the next day it was all class. It was all size, people that had less, that didn't have any value. I don't want to say value. They didn't have any sweat in the game. They didn't own anything. So the population shift changed dramatically in the school overnight when the three largest apartment complexes in the area went to government housing, and that started it with the schools.
Well, that reinforces your point, Philip.
Yeah, that was in 1974. It's when Pruitt-Igoe was dynamited, and a lot of those residents were transferred into Spanish Lake.
Another call. As time allows, we'll get as many in as we can. We'll bring in Mike calling from North St. Louis. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I just want to correct him on that last sentence. When they blew up the Pruitt-Igoe, most of the black folks was moved over to Walnut Park, not Spanish Lake. But so far as, like the brother has said earlier, I don't care nothing about no white folks moving somewhere. I'm 64 years old, always lived in the city. I've always, my kids have went to school and were graduated from college. I look at it as all economic. Why don't you go out to St. John, St. Anne, and there's pockets in St. Louis. Go down Sarah. Go up on Del Mar and Goodfellow. You got black folks that have always lived in the city with $200,000 and $300,000 homes. And all this, woe is me. Black folks have, and the value of their property on Enright, West Bell, just like I say, go into inner city. All this going down Grand and looking at Carter Carburetor, a bus, whatever. You got just as many poor white folks as you got poor black. It's all economic, and that's all that I got to say. But I don't believe in, you know, the white folks want to move out in Westfield and get flooded on these floodplains. More power to them. Bye.
All right. Well, Mike certainly worked up about that, but he does have a very valid point. economics is almost always at the bottom of social situations such as this.
Yeah, all definitely.
Right. All right. I wanted to take a call from Jerry in O'Fallon, but I don't think time is going to allow for that. Apparently he wants to ask what one person or what can a person do about all of this. Thoughts?
I think it comes down to fear. This whole myth of black people bringing down your property value needs to be lifted from St. Louis. That is not the case. The realtors want you to believe that, and they want to scare you out of your homes. If you don't move, then areas don't change. When you move and there's a mass abandonment of your area, there will be decline. So which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Just think about that.
All right. Well, you're very happy, I think, with the work that has it been shown anyplace else?
Yeah, we premiered in Washington, D.C. last month for the federal government. HUD requested to see the film specifically, so they flew us out to Washington, D.C., and I screened it for them.
But the government is not responding to questions you might have with regard to what's been going on.
I think some of them were aware of it, but I think that each city decides to implement public housing in their own way. There's a lot of freedom in terms of where you can put the housing and how much. St. Louis has decided to put to quarantine it in certain areas, and that leads to problems.
Hmm. You're living in Los Angeles now. We only have a couple of seconds left. Well, coming back and doing this, what do you think about your old home area, not just Spanish Lake, but the way the situation is being handled in this area?
Like I said, driving up North Grand and seeing all these old abandoned apartments, houses and these beautiful buildings just sit vacant. It saddens me. And I think that a lot of hard work was put into that and people should appreciate it.
Philip Andrew Morton, thanks so much for being with us. Good luck with the film Spanish Lake, which will be premiering here on Friday at the Tivoli and run for about a week. That's Friday night at the Tivoli. Thanks so much. Good luck with the film.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll have a talk with Francis Levine, who is the new president and CEO of the Missouri History Museum. We'll talk about the future of the taxpayer-funded institution after recent controversies, including a questionable land purchase and high executive pay. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.